go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, let's get this thing going. It's Thursday. It's the 5th of April, 2012. This is a live program, as they all are supposed to be, except when scheduling intervenes. A little program note here on this thorn in the side Thursday. A little program note that there will be an interruption of the schedule. Not next, well... Look at a calendar, Bob. You've got one on your computer, for God's sakes. Your computer is your friend. Yeah, not next week, but the week following. The 16th, 17th, and 18th, and possibly the 19th. I'll try to get home in time for showtime, but definitely the 16th, 17th, and 18th are stricken from the record. So, as they say, please make a note of it. One of these days I'd like for one of these absences to be accompanied by me saying, you know what I'm doing? I'm taking some vacation time. This ain't no vacation time. There is ongoing work in Washington, D.C. Regarding mountaintop removal that is going to amount to a fairly large announcement when that announcement time comes. And I sincerely, when that time comes, I'm going to be bouncing all over the place because I'm itching to let you guys know as it is, but just can't. So there's that. But anyway, we will be there. I'll be in D.C. The 16th, 17th, and 18th, and the 19th will be a travel day for coming home. And I'll try to get out the door bright and surly so as to be jumping in behind the chair, hopefully no later than 4 o'clock on Thursday afternoon. So there's that. Other good news. After the show last night, John Fox has been busier than busier than a toothless beaver. But he did get in touch with me last night to let me know that, yay, verily, hallelujah, glory, the PayPal button is back up and running at headonradionetwork.com. And so that option has returned. Thank you very kindly for those of you who did contribute last night. You've made it possible for us to get closer to being, you know, because this is the 5th of April. We're almost at the end of the first week of April. And the way we do the math around here, just divide it for six, you know, we need to be about $625, at about $625 for the beginning of April. And we are about... let's see here. We are about $275 off of that mark right now, plus the hole we wound up in from March, which meant, of course, that in the Beat the Swede challenge, we did not compel the Swede, namely Scott, to kick in an extra 50 for the month of March, and dadgummit, but that's the nature of the struggle. But the PayPal button is back up. It's at the tab called Contribute on the website page. And there's a little widget there that tells you where we are in this process, which makes it easy for you to find out exactly how it's going. So actually, it's a little more than 225 there, looking at it. So, but then again, my math is suspect, so no surprise. So that's all that. And on any given night, we try to raise about $100, which is, you know, it all works out to be at about 5 cents an hour for the program once you do all the math that I don't do very well. Answering a question out of the chat room, Onward to Dystopia wants to know how Ferg's drumming's coming along. He's still doing it, but he bounces back and forth between his drums, his keyboards, and his guitar, with the occasional foray into, "Dad, I want a banjo," which is answered with a very simple, "No." So there's that. And he also honks a little on the saxophone some, too. Focus is a challenge sometimes. He wants to do it all. Oh, let's see. A note coming in from Kath from Canada. I had to use the back door to the chat room, FYI. That will be attended to in due time as well. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday, about 6 past the hour. And there's two or three stories that really, really fit the definition. And well, let's start with the obvious one. Now, baseball season is upon us, gloriously. I always love baseball. I like sports. I'm very much the regular guy in that regard. But I am admittedly more of a National League fan than an American League fan. I still have very deep-seated biases against the designated hitter rule. So I tend to pay more attention to the senior league than the junior one. But this story, Torrey Hunter, among other things, is a baseball all-star, and probably more importantly, he is a two-time nominee of the for the Roberto Clemente Award that recognizes players for community involvement and sportsmanship. That kind of nomination marks you as a pretty decent human being. He's also won the Branch Rickey Award for service. All of which speaks pretty clearly to Torrey Hunter's qualities as a decent person. So I guess he was a little bit surprised today to find himself faced off with police officers carrying guns. His home security system malfunctioned. He lives in Newport, California. Plays for the Angels. Did I mention that? His home security system went off yesterday, and 20 minutes after it went off, lo and behold, the 5-0 were outside his house. Cruisers, black and whites, whatever you want to call them. The local constabulary. And when he walked outside of his house, he was met by weapons drawn against him. And they demanded his ID. He put this on Twitter. "My alarm went off in my house while I was in it. 20 minutes later, I saw cops checking out the scene. Went outside and they drew their guns on me. They didn't believe I lived here in Newport Coast, so they walked me upstairs at gunpoint to get my ID." Do I necessarily have to say that Torrey Hunter is a black man? for the non-sports fans in the audience? Yeah, Torrey Hunter's a black guy. So there he was in a relatively well-off neighborhood, walking out of a house, and the cops, well, the default position of the cops was, guy ain't got no right to be there. I mean, look, he's black. When I showed him my ID, the cop said, I'm an Angels fan, I hope you guys have a great season. All caps. Are you kidding me? But he did start to walk it back, Mr. Hunter did. And he said, hey, Twitterland, I'm not upset that the cops did their job today. I'm actually glad they were protecting home. The cops that were here today had their guns drawn but pointed downward for safety. Those guys handled the situation like trained cops. And that's probably true. Because how many nice neighborhoods are there in America where if the police show up and a black man is walking out of it while the alarm is going off, the police will assume that the guy has a right to be there? This is a scary, scary country. And personally, when I saw his walk back, I thought, you know what? I'd walk back too. Very slowly. Very carefully. Because what's he going to do? Get indignant? And talk about the broad brush assumptions that the cops had to make? Come on, this is a home security system that goes off and notifies the police. It carries data with it. Name of address, probably owner's name. But, no, the guy walking out of the house, did he put his hands, details, we don't have details. Did he put his hands in the air? Did he put his hands behind his back? Did he do something to show them that he was not a threat? You know, that he was not TWB, threatening while black. Because that kind of, you can get dead in a hurry. Just ask the 68-year-old Vietnam Marine veteran who was gunned down when his medical alert accidentally went off. The cops blew him away. I don't know if Mr. Hunter knew that story, but he apparently handled his own situation very carefully and very wisely. But this is America. And the only way you can get any kind of an idea or make any kind of a comparison is if you ask, how would the police have reacted had he been white? And had he been white, I just don't think he gets the guns drawn on him. Because, again, this is America. One of his teammates, pitcher C.J. Wilson, responded to the original tweet saying, that's racist. And Torrey Hunter responded, LOL, now you know I can't say that. And it was about an hour later that he wrote back, or tweeted back, to say that he was okay with everything the way it had been handled. And again, I just assert to you, of course he did. Because he's going to keep living there, and the police are going to keep being the police there. How many years ago was it that the police murdered a Pittsburgh Steelers football player for DWB, driving while black? Remember that? That's just part of our reality in this country. So naturally, he says, did a great job. They didn't have their guns pointed at me. They had them pointed down at the ground. Let's be... Because the next time, they will point their guns at him. The next time, they might pull the trigger. And there are details that I simply do not know. Does Mr. Hunter have children? Does he have a son, maybe? Who, in the words of our president, would look like Trayvon Martin? Because if he does, that's part of the consideration, too. Because people with badges can work vendettas in ways that people with guns, without guns, cars, and badges cannot. Just can't. It is a scary place. Very. So there's that. That's, I guess we'll file that under social thorn in the side for Thursday. And then this, a little giggle. I usually don't play excerpts from other progressive programs, but this kind of deserves it. You know, when I sit, when I sit down to, have a cold beer, I generally try to do it without firearms nearby, but equally importantly, I do it without microphones nearby, or cameras, or my tweeting devices, because TUI, tweeting under the influence, can be very, very embarrassing, as can YouTubing under the influence. Sandra sent this along. And this is too funny not to share with you. We all know, of course, who Alex Jones is, right? Disturbed right-wing freak who thinks that he is some sort of particularized special ownership of some sort of conspiracy. He decided to have a run at the Young Turks. I've met Cenk a few times. Decent Joe. Doesn't seem to be, he's not sitting at the bar demanding that all the pretzels be taken out of the party mix or anything like that. I want cheddar goldfish from Pepperidge Farm, not these off-brand little rabbit ones. But Alex Jones decided to take a run at the Young Turks, I guess out of some sort of manifest jealousy? What? I don't know. But he did it sitting in what appears to be his grandmother's living room. And he did it without clothing on the upper half, presumably, of his body. Now, if ever there's been a case of... Just listen to this voice. This is what you call... And it was David in Tennessee who first elaborated on this. You've always heard I've made the joke a number of times that I've got a face made for radio. Well, Alex Jones, yeah, he's got one of those too. But more importantly, he and probably the right-wing asshat Mark Levin have what David in Tennessee terms a voice made for print. Just ponder that one a minute, and when the giggling subsides, yeah. Alex Jones sounds like he gargles with razor blades, and whoever let him near a microphone Well, no one told him, you know, Alex, you'd sound good on the radio. No, no, this is pure ego. But anyway, just check this out.
One internet news show. I mean, I'm on over 100 AM and FM stations, XM. But on the internet, just look at my website on Alexa compared to their website. Look at my videos, more views. I mean, you're full of crap. I'm number one in alternative media, period, globally. Even Rolling Stone, New York Magazine, all they've done actuaries. I'm number one. He's number one, period.
Yeah.
By the way, here's one thing he's missing. It's a shirt.
Yeah.
What gets hold of you to make you... So he's going to take a pot shot at another program, and he does it with his shirt off sitting in his grandmother's living room? And I had no idea that before she passed away many years ago, Selma Diamond had had children.
Because clearly, Alex Jones is the love child of Selma Diamond.
Hey, what a voice. Are there people who actually listen to him for 2 or 3 hours a day? Now, I'm not saying that my own set of pipes are some sort of mellifluous, the golden... No.
But, if you talk like this, it's probably a good idea not to go into radio. I can't do this for very long, or I'll start... It might stick.
He sounds like a character from The Simpsons.
I'm number one.
Sure you are. Wait a minute, don't Marge's sisters talk that way? And isn't one of them named Selma? Maybe Alex Jones is maybe it's like something from Roger Rabbit, and Alex Jones is actually a cartoon character come to life. Yeah, I got this. I got this little clip. I got this little clip from Sandra with the sort of reminder saying, "Stay humble, Bob." Well, and let me tell you, it is not quite warm enough around here for us to go be doing naked radio again. I'm fully clothed. Just for the record, if somehow or another I was to hook up a webcam, yeah, I'm just sitting in a shirt, a pair of khakis.
Yeah, I'm number one.
Oh, from David in Tennessee, the research department, Tori Hunter, the wiki makes no mention of wife or children regarding Mr. Hunter. He did, however, do some growing up in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Are there any questions now as to Mr. Hunter's deference shown to the men with the guns and the Motorolas? No questions, David. None. Pine Bluff, yeah, that could be tough territory. No, it is entirely understandable as to why Mr. Hunter might be completely forgiving, because the cops aren't. Let's go back and check in with Alex Jones again for a minute here.
But even with more detail, even though, as you saw, there's no numbers, there's no actual facts.
Right.
Let's watch that one.
Like, I saw the Young Turks website last night. I was looking at some YouTube videos. Of course, our YouTube channel has many times more views than they do.
Of course.
My radio show dwarfs their XM show. We're on XM, too. But that's not what irritated me. It was the statement of the number one news show on the web. Well, that's pure baloney. I am the number one news show, bar none, by Google.
Only if you're operating within a very, very broad, almost fantastic, and I don't mean that as a complimentary phrase, I mean as in a product of fantasy definition of news program.
Analytics, Alexa, YouTube, every, no one is close. No one. No one is close.
Does Alex Jones have a little ego problem? I don't know. But back to the shirtlessness. Trust me, you're glad I'm just playing the audio here. You don't want to watch a shirtless Alex Jones.
Animals and all the corporate whore media promoting them, and nobody's on YouTube get red carpets rolled out to them, but we're treated like crap and have asked for it and can't even get a partner channel. They won't even give us full hour uploads. We get the 15 minute. We're crap, we're garbage, we're filth, we're trash, because we're real. And the system's doing everything they can to suppress us.
Like, you're not getting a partnership.
Yeah, just another case of the man keeping Alex Jones down. Jesus, this is... yes, Jim. Just think, Nude Radio, your clothing optional station, all within the sound of my voice. Strip off now. You will obey. Don't frighten the children or the family pets, please. This is... Well, there's a larger point with this Alex Jones thing. The guy has made himself a small fortune hustling paranoid conspiracy videos and trying to coattail and bandwagon on, of all people, Ron Paul. Rawr, blech, yuck. And anybody who does anything that is remotely resembling something liberal or progressive is, I guess it's open season. Sometimes it's nice to be operating way, 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 way down here at submicroscopic depth. Because wouldn't it just suck to have to get in a flame war with a guy who responds by taking grainy shirtless videos of himself?
Yeah, we're garbage. They treat us like filth. They won't let us upload a full hour of the program. We only get 15 minutes.
No. We will soldier on, thank you, and try to stay out of any... And like Sandra admonished, stay humble. Indeed. Of course, the God Almighty of all media is the oxymoron, who initiated what has since been referred to as the war on women, which has sort of spilled out of its banks and gone to other places. I'm sure by now, have you heard this story about Lee Aronson, the creator of that program, 2.5 Men, gave an interview to the Hollywood Reporter saying he's sick of female centered comedies, with this quote: "Enough, ladies, I get it. You have periods. We're approaching peak vagina on television, the point of labia saturation." What's he complaining about in this weird, misogynistic little rant? He works in an industry that is dominated and in which all determinations as to programming are made by demographic viewership numbers. There is not a commercial broadcast out there that is not created for purposes of having little advertising spaces in there to reach out and sell stuff to people. We don't operate on that model here. We operate in the one foot in the bucket for 5 years model. And we're grateful for the bucket. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter whether it's the NASCAR channel or the bow hunting channel or the cooking channel or the knitting channel. There's nothing out there that isn't created for purposes of delivering potential customers to potential businesses. So if women watch a lot of TV, wouldn't you expect programming? I don't know. Take him back a generation. Maybe Lee Aronson would be pissed off that Julia was on television. Because it's the same kind of mindset. Apparently, in Lee Aronson's twisted little world, we can only have programming that speaks to his sensibilities. But again, a magnificent example, I think, of the terror, the gender terror that grips this country. I don't think anybody is ever going to argue that 2.5 men is the 21st century progeny of the same great dramatic minds that gave us Shakespeare or Eugene O'Neill or Tennessee Williams. No. It's about at least until he got canned, it's about a guy who spends his life altering his reality and having as much promiscuous sex as possible. I've laughed a couple of times. I've seen it. Charlie Sheen was funny. But I can't imagine a television schedule that's nothing but that. But that was television for a long time. A male perspective about... But success comes to a few programs that deal where the female actors are the protagonists, and suddenly Lee Aronson is all worked up. But you know, as the late great comedian Jerry Clower once remarked, somebody's getting some relief. It's a long story. I won't bother you with it. But with the guns turned, no, don't use that image, Bob. With attention turned on Lee Aronson, you know who was really happy to have some company? Yeah, the jiggling one.
The show has portrayed women in a less than flattering light from its inception, led for 8 seasons by Charlie Sheen. That's talking about 2.5 Men. So just as we're coming down off this phony fake war on women, we got a Hollywood guy blasting women on TV, and he's forced to back off. He's been forced to apologize. He's been forced to take it back. Yeah, stupid joke. I'm sorry. And his comments have been deleted. But before they made him delete the comments, and we're approaching peak, which all he's talking about here is the chickification of his business. He writes sitcoms, comedy writers, and the women have taken over. It's all vagina all the time. We get it! Okay, women, let us alone.
You know, you would think to hear that women started it. All vagina all the time. I'm at a loss. I don't think I understand my world anymore. Where we just define people by their organs? I mean, during the Bush years, it was what? All testosterone all the time? What? Shall we work our way through organs and down into amino acids? It's all carnitine all the time. It's all taurine all the time. It's all pregnenolone all the time. I'm lost in my own country. I feel like I have come undone from the ability to understand how to view not just my country but the world. We get it, okay, women, let us alone. You know, some of that was cute when it was portrayed with a broad brush by what's his name, Ed O'Neill, as Bundy, on Married with Children. It was satire so broad it could not be understood as anything but slapstick. But whether it's the outrage of a shirtless Alex Jones or mercifully the shirt wearing Rush Limbaugh, we've completely given up on the notion of anything resembling analytical or intelligent attempts at comprehension. Ray understands with the paranoia of Alex Jones. Where am I going to get my crisis garden without Alex Jones? Obama's going to take my guns and stick me in a camp, probably take my fun stuff too. And then Jim, sort of drilling down to the heart of it all, maybe he covertly wishes he had a vagina. I don't think Jim's too many darts away from the center bull on this one. Donald Trump is outraged about a post-operative transsexual contestant in one of his beauty pageants. Rush Limbaugh, Lee Aronson, is angry that his brand of misogynistic promiscuity and substance abuse might not be the favorite of all the television viewers. Limbaugh is happy to have some company and just wants women to leave him alone. You remember the story about, and I was just happy to see a story about Limbaugh's wife out there, because I'm still pretty, at some point in time, I'm sure he's kept her in a pit. But that story from a couple of days ago about the fact that his marriage is in pretty deep stuff because of his relentlessly misogynistic rants, and his wife is being asked questions about how she can tolerate such a pig. She's got to be loving this. Because they're probably looking at her pretty funny. Honey, does he talk to you like that at home? No, he doesn't even talk to me at all. We live in separate wings of the mansion. You think I'm in this for love? You know, there's humor. And, yeah, 2.5 Men had some good comedy writers, and Sheen delivered as a comedic presence. I don't think I've even seen it since the Ashton Kutcher advent. The most desperate television move since replacing Dick Sargent with Dick York, or Dick York with Dick Sargent on Bewitched. It's fun. But that doesn't mean that everything has to be that. In fact, it's a it's kind of a guaranteed recipe for failure if you just try to mimic clone one off another off another off another. There have been very few sequels or spin-offs as good as the first one. The Star Trek movies being a notable exception. Even-numbered Star Trek movies, good. Odd-numbered Star Trek movies, bad. So there's our Star Trek reference for the evening. But let's run downhill from there. From the complaints about female genitalia, let us run downhill to the head of the Repiglickin National Committee. A person by name Rince Priebus. Sounds like a bubble in a bathtub. Rince Priebus has declared, and I'm not kidding, this is kind of one of those sit downy kind of moments. The head of the Repiglickin National Committee, Rince Priebus, of the Imperial Imodium Mounted Dragoons and his trusty possum Splat, "I'll save you! I'm Rince Priebus." Rince Priebus has declared that women are the same as insects. Don't you feel so much better? Double X chromosome, folks. The Repiglickins are getting a little bit tired. A little bit just disenchanted with having to constantly, well, with having had their misogyny outed and being called to account for it. And Rince Priebus, in the course of manifesting his displeasure, really did compare half of the human, well, more than half of the human population of the planet to insects. And it's, of course, a classic right-wing ploy or stratagem to say that it's the liberal media. It doesn't matter what it is. The liberal media is what is destroying America. Rince Priebus gave an interview to Bloomberg TV. He was apparently asked about the so-called war on women. You know, the one that was engendered by attempts to force women to be penetrated by transvaginal ultrasound probes, the right-wing attempts to try to keep women from being able to have access to life-saving health care, the Rush Limbaugh stuff, slut! But in the strange little parallel universe that Rince Priebus inhabits, that's all the media's fault. From the interview, quote, "If the Democrats said we had a war on caterpillars, and every mainstream media outlet talked about the fact that Republicans have a war on caterpillars, then we'd have a problem. We'd have problems with caterpillars," Republican National Committee Chairman Rince Priebus said in an interview on Bloomberg Television's Political Capital with Al Hunt, airing this weekend. "It's a fiction. the war on women, the Republican assault on the rights of more than half of the population of both this country and this planet is a fiction. When a woman who is in a crisis situation anyway and doesn't want to have a penis-like probe inserted into her nether regions, it's a fiction. Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, claimed, well, women aren't concerned about contraception. Horse feathers! Contraception is the one single thing that has served as a means of creating some degree of equality among genders in this country and in this world. Okay, look, Betsy, I was raised Southern. I was trying to find genitals, okay? In their genitals. I've already said vagina this evening. I don't have a problem saying it. I'm just trying not to be the kind of that radio thing. No. Okay? But if you ever needed a clear statement of the fact that women really don't count in right-wing authoritarian GOP-type calculus, this is it. Rince Priebus did not have to compare women to insects. He did that by choice. And he did that, I will submit to you, because that really is the way that the right-wing Republicans, etc., think about women. Insects. You know, caterpillars, the certain species of them can destroy crops, ruin entire forests. Why caterpillars? Why not simply answer the question by saying, granted, he would have been lying, but why not just say it's a fiction? What Freudian slip caused the head of the Republican National Committee to compare women with bugs? And not just bugs, but destructive bugs. That's probably a very primate-centric view of bugs. I realize that. But sometimes I fail. Bugs! Did he think people wouldn't notice? Is that also part of the... Well, you know, they're not the brightest half of the species. Yeah, that's been out there. I saw that the other day, too, and I can't remember the details. But someone arguing that women have smaller brains than men, and therefore men... That's why men rule the planet. Great job we've done with it, too, huh? Caterpillars. Do these guys have to go home? Are their own relationships with women? Are the women in their lives so docile and so meek? That they dare not say anything? For fear of what? Getting slapped? Getting beaten? We do know where a great deal of domestic violence happens, don't we? Yeah. Jesus land. Divorces, too. Premarital sex, too. just about everything that the right wing objects to is stuff that they do in much higher percentages than the so-called liberals and progressives do. Right. As David notes, Vince Priebus, and we thought Michael Steele was a tool? So that, yeah. And here's how bad it is. Here's how bad it's gotten. Even some Republicans who march lockstep with the misogynistic policies of their party, and who do that marching in Jesus' land, you know, behind the cornbread curtain, can't do it anymore. This particular case comes from Georgia, and it concerns a representative there by the name of Ron Stevens. Now, don't get the wrong idea. I have come not to praise Ron Stevens, nor to bury him. Ron Stevens is an upright, God-fearing, pro-life or pig-licking from Georgia. And he's always had a 100% pro-life voting record. He ain't nobody been a bigger friend of the little fetuses than Ron Stevens. That's how bad this full-on assault on the very existential rights of women to control the workings of their own bodies has become. He had to walk away from an abortion bill. A guy, pink, pasty, doughy, the very epitome of those people that we talk about being the problem, walked away from an abortion bill in the Georgia legislature. Under consideration was a bill that would have prevented women from obtaining an abortion after 20 weeks, you know, the so-called fetal pain threshold, which is a complete line of utter and unscientific imaginary nonsense. Present law in Georgia prevents a woman from terminating a pregnancy for any reason after 26 weeks. And they were trying to dial it down to 20. There were no exceptions in the bill. And lo and behold, there stood Representative Ron Stevens, a Republican, a pro-lifer, who had to break with his party and vote against the bill. Even though he does love the little fetuses. Why? Because Republican ideology ran smack dab into life in the real world. Representative Ron Stevens has him a daughter. His daughter's name's Ashlyn. Ashlyn got pregnant a few years back. And during the pregnancy, and there's some things you can't tell about a pregnancy back when the quote-unquote baby bears more resemblance to a tadpole than a person. There's just stuff you can't know until the baby begins to develop into its human phase. And some of that happens after 20 weeks. One of those things that happens after 20 weeks is that a woman can find out, as Representative Stevens' daughter Ashlyn did, that her baby has trisomy. T-R-I-S-O-M-Y. You can look it up. It is a genetic defect. It is a fatal flaw in fetal development. And there's not a blessed thing you can do. You know, the right-wingers are forever... Look here at this video of the genius neonatal surgeons in at Vanderbilt University going in and performing heart surgery on the little fetus inside the womb. It's a miracle from Jeebus. And people who have abortions are murderers. Unless they're Rick Santorum. And then they take the purple lizard home and pass it around for the children. Say hello to your brother. At 5 months, Representative Stevens told the Savannah Morning News, at 5 months, they told her part of her baby's brain was outside the skull and the heart was inverted. They said it would take only one or two breaths. She would have watched it die. The family did what any family should be able to do in this situation. With the mother's best interests at heart and understanding that hers was the final decision, as it must be, there is no other way. They discussed their alternatives. And Ashlyn decided that it would be better to end the pregnancy where it was than to go through the entire birth process, the trauma of birth, and have it followed within a second by the even greater trauma of death. The hardliners and the ideologues and the reactionaries of the Republican Party in Georgia would brook no amendment to their 20-week fetal pain bill. They wanted to make sure that more Ashlands would get to watch their babies die. So when the bill came to a final vote in the Georgia House of Representatives, without any opportunity to amend it to provide exceptions for medical disasters like trisomy, Representative Ron Stevens said he felt physically sick, and he walked off the floor of the Georgia House during the roll call. In the interview with the Savannah Morning News, he said, "For something this cruel to happen to my daughter, or anyone's daughter, is just plain inhumane. I consider myself pro-life, but this provision was a distortion of pro-life values." He was, of course, immediately attacked by the Georgia teabaggers. For having abandoned a bedrock plank of the Georgia Republican platform. Well, when it's your little girl, and I don't care if she is 5, 25, or 55, if you're the daddy, she will always be your little girl. That's not sexism, that's just what it is to be a daddy. When it is your little girl, bedrock planks of Republican Party platforms can go straight into the fire and burn. You see, this is what happened. This Republican ran headlong into reality. And apparently he has something resembling a functioning mind. And because he had a functioning mind, and something resembling human compassion, he could not consider this legislation without considering its real-world implications, and suddenly the face of every female in the state of Georgia became the face of his daughter Ashlyn. And in this pro-life Republican, a little flicker of human conscience, human empathy, human concern, all that stuff his Jesus preached about, it all flickered to life, and he had to walk away from the Repiglican hate machine. And maybe that's part of the difference between us and them. We don't have to have it happen to us in order to extend compassion to others. David in Tennessee noting, yes, she would have watched it die after the physical torment of birth. There are no happy ways to deal with trisomy. There are no happy ways to deal with what my lovely wife dealt with. There are only decisions that are more or less humane, more or less inherently cruel. And a party that declares that it wants to, it cherishes individual liberties, at the same time is able to maintain the cognitively dissonant stance of wanting government to make the decision for people in those horrific crisis situations. As David in Tennessee notes in regard to that question, you know, do these people ever go home? David says, Repiglican's getting back to the house. Bob. They get home and remind the little woman about the creature comforts provided by his work. For the visual, fast forward in Brazil, the movie Brazil, to the point where the young torturer comes home to the little woman and reminds her of the lifestyle his career provides them both. Yeah. And that guy lives in a whole lot of right-wing houses. It's sort of part and parcel of that line that I use for my signature in my emails from Kurt Vonnegut. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. And it's true. Kath in Canada. Hey, Bob. Just to clarify, I think you're referring to trisomy 18. There are others, but that one has extreme birth defects. And yes, I think so. The news story I had, it merely referred to trisomy, T-R-I-S-O-M-Y. But part of the baby's brain was outside its skull and its heart was inverted. What kind of sick, sadistic, monstrous individual would demand that that child, which remember they say can feel pain at this point, be put through the trauma of birth and then the agony of immediate death? What kind of monster? a Republican. It is their stock in trade. It's what they do. Kim writing in. Yesterday, subject line womanizing. Yesterday, I was in my doctor's office, female doctor, and as I left, a Muslim woman entered the hallway. Bob, I must live a sheltered life. This is the first time I have ever encountered a woman in a full black burqa with only a slit for her eyes to see out. I was amazed at the beauty. Yes, in a very strange way it was, as the outfit swirled as she turned to look at me. Last night, our bedtime talk was about how I have rights and live so differently than she. Women can't afford to let these repiglickens get in power in this country. I remember what it was like in the early 70s being a female and wanting equal rights at my workplace. Seeing the burqa made it all real to me. Do you realize, Bob, and I didn't, do you realize under my union insurance, I have never, and do not now, have pregnancy prevention, birth control. But a man in the union can get a play toy if he has diabetes and man issues. Something is wrong here. And indeed, Kim, something is wrong. And that something runs way deep. She's right. Insurance will cover a broad variety of male erectile dysfunction treatments, from pills to hardware. But something as prosaic as birth control, know that we will go to the mattresses over in this country. Because at the very essence of their core, in its most distilled and poisonous form, Repiglicans live in fear. The only thing a Repiglican is not scared of is a lobbyist with a bag of money. Because they know all they have to do is take the money and do as they're told. Everything else, I mean, talk about being scared of your own shadow. Everything else scares them silly, starting with women folk. Imagine, can you imagine having to live your life like that? Practically peeing yourself at the, that person might not have been born a woman, but done had herself an operation himself, itself, I don't even know what to call them. Scared of gay folks. Don't get close, I might catch the gay. Y'all can't get married because then I might run off with a hooker and be sniffing meth off his butt, because that's how I am. Dark-skinned folks. Shoot him now! Liberals. They're trying to destroy our country. Really, names anybody. Two can play. Everybody can play here. There is not one thing you can mention that I cannot make a case for Republicans being scared of and trying to control through some governmental or judicial process. Steve King of Iowa is scared of vegetarians. No, really. He is scared of vegetarians. You think I'm kidding? I ain't.
And I'm here to tell you, I am a committed carnivore. I like meat. I sit on the Ag Committee, and we had a hearing before the Ag Committee when we invited in the president of the Humane Society of the United States, HSUS, President Wayne Pacelli, and we had one or two other witnesses from the anti-meat crowd, or anti-animal husbandry crowd. PETA was there and one other active animal activist group. And so we just asked them under oath, are you a vegetarian? And they confessed they were vegetarians, all of them. Well,
imagine this. This is the government of the United States. Are you now, or have you ever been, a vegetarian? And this terrified clown is proud of... Oh, we... asked under oath, we are you a vegetarian?
...really are with an agenda for our diet. It's fine with me if they want to eat vegetables. It just isn't fine with me if they want to take my meat away. And so at the end of that hearing, I asked to be recognized a second time, and when I was, I said, well, I've heard these...
Hey, you dumbass, they're not going to have to take your meat away. The planet's going to take you away. I'm one of those meat eaters. I'll never be able to be Jewish or Muslim because I refuse to give up barbecue. Not to mention shrimp and oysters and yummy things like that. But I don't think anybody's trying to take my meat away. No, if anybody's out there trying to help me become a vegetarian... It's the meat industry, the guys who line this dumbass's pockets.
Confessions about being a vegetarian.
Wait, what? Let's back up just a minute.
And so at the end of that hearing, I asked to be recognized a second time, and when I was, I said, well, I've heard these confessions about being a vegetarian, and I came here, I'm going to make my confession. I, too, am a vegetarian. I eat concentrated, recycled, enhanced vegetables in the form of meat. And that was the last word on that particular hearing.
Oh, he's a funny one, that Steve King. Remember, this is the guy who said America would be such a better place if the homosexuals would just stop acting so gay. It turns out... He's a liar. He's out there talking to empty chairs, according to from the appearance of this video, but he's a liar because, well, lying is what Republicans do best. It didn't even happen. He's out there crowing to the hoi polloi in Iowa back home about what a brave hero he is for the meat eaters and is trying to take our meat away from us. And PETA was there, and yeah, I showed that PETA. You heard it! Some research folks over at Think Progress dug around a little bit, and they isolated this to apparently a May the 8th, 2007 question hearing. He didn't ask anyone if they were a vegetarian. PETA was not in attendance at all. The person who asked someone... whether or not, to state for clarity's sake, whether they were vegetarian or, you know, an omnivore, was actually a Wisconsin Democrat by the name of Steve Kagan. Not Steve King, but Steve King thinks he can get away with it because, you know, them people that vote for him back home in Iowa, all they need to hear is Steve, and that's their Steve. Think Progress having noted that he did at the hearing say, I eat recycled, concentrated, enhanced vegetables in the form of meat. Wonder how he feels about shrimp. I bet Steve can eat him shrimp. I love shrimp, but I don't like to think about what they like to eat. Or what they are nearest to in terms of relations among animals and what they're closest kin to. For the sake of folks having dinner right now, we'll just blow right past that. But they're scared of vegetarians. They've got to stand up to the vegetarians. Or the next thing you know, we'll all be living on brown rice and tofu, and then our hearts won't clog up, and we won't get atherosclerosis, and we won't be getting heart transplants at age 71 after 6 heart attacks and 7 heart procedures like that good, godly, upstanding American patriot Dick Cheney. Really, let's play a game tonight. Use the email, you know the address, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. We can do it on the phone. We can do it in the chat room. You name something, and we'll decide, and we will do so rationally and intelligently, we will decide whether or not Repiglicans are terrified of it. And I just submit to you, strictly from an experimental standpoint, I submit to you that we will not find many things of which Repiglicans are not just water in the bowels, horrified, terrified, scared, mortified. Because that is the one central thing that defines the modern conservative, if modern and conservative can be used in the same sentence. They are scared of everything. They're scared of the future. They're scared that their precious little white daughter might run off and marry a dark-skinned man, and, well, then there goes the neighborhood. It turns out there's a story out there that the banksters, once they've foreclosed on a home, if the home is in a community of color, they will let it fall apart, even though it is one of their own assets at that point. They will let it fall apart and do so at much higher rates than they do in nice lily-white communities, because they're afraid that somebody might want it. What kind of a future does this country have if it is defined by fear? If we let the Repiglicans, the conservatives, the Bible-believing Christians, if we let them define this country by their fears, this country has no future. None. We're done. Because you cannot live in fear. Whatever you're doing that you do motivated by fear is not anything that you could be, that could be compared to living. Is it? Jim. Just tell this fool to grab his meat and beat it. Pay attention to this guy, says Kevin from Colorado Springs. He's definitely a future Darwin Award winner. Fear. It's what's for dinner. Right? Yeah. So, holy cow, it is 20 minutes past the hour. Sorry. We will take a little break. It being Thursday and all, I like Tuesdays and Thursdays because we get to hear from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. They do a wonderful job with the Green News Report. And the Green News Report is on its way. And then we'll get to your calls. And the lines, they are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you don't need to use the toll-free service, and you can direct dial in, it's 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported, note, liberal voice. whose PayPal button works again. This is The Horn, and we'll be back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, April 5, 2012.
Cap and trade was originally proposed by conservatives and Republicans as a market-based solution to solving environmental problems.
Obama pushes back on Republicans as his USDA cuts back on food safety inspections. Crackers versus farmers in Colorado. The warmest March on record for half of the U.S. Plus,
CO2 cannot cause global warming.
Another major study smacks down on climate change deniers.
All of those smackdowns and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
But this notion that we're getting to a point where now carbon dioxide is bad.
Well, not as bad for you as the Fox Business Channel. Idiots. This is your Green News Report.
Okay, Des, I know you got a lot of family members down in Dallas, some of whom I know are climate change deniers. And I'm just kind of curious, between the record heat last summer, the record flood last summer, and now these massive tornadoes tearing through Dallas suburbs, any chance any of those folks down there in Dallas are beginning to get the message?
Oh, you know climate change deniers aren't that open to actual facts or reality. But I will say that last month was officially the warmest March on record across half of the United States. Only half. It was caused by yet another unusual blocking pattern in the jet stream that parked out over the Midwest and created that record heat wave just across the eastern half of the continent, but it stretched all the way up into Canada. And this year is already on track to continue last year observed increase in extreme weather events.
My prediction, it's going to blow them all away, given the fact that we've had 80 and 90 degree temperatures across much of the Midwest in March and April. But of course, I'm not a scientist.
President Obama intensified his attacks on Republicans in Congress at a speech to the annual gathering of the Associated Press on Tuesday, accusing the Republican Party of hypocrisy in abandoning many previously conservative policies that were once championed by Republicans in the past, including cap and trade.
The first president to talk about cap and trade was George H.W. Bush. Now you've got the other party essentially saying we shouldn't even be thinking about environmental protection. Let's gut the EPA.
Apparently, Presidents Nixon, Reagan, and both Bushes were all raging socialist commie tree huggers who would have been tossed out of today's Republican Party.
Yeah, and Barack Obama has gone so far to the right to try to please them to no avail. I'm wondering when he's ever going to get the message that, hey, pal, they're just not that into you.
And speaking of pushing farther to the right, also in that speech, Obama touted his record of cutting regulations.
As president, I've eliminated dozens of programs that weren't working and announced over 500 regulatory reforms that will save businesses and taxpayers billions.
And just one of the administration's new regulatory cuts is at the Department of Agriculture, which announced this week a new proposal to sharply cut back on federal inspections of poultry slaughterhouses and instead would allow the billion-dollar industry to inspect itself using private inspectors paid for by the industry.
What could possibly go wrong?
However, an internal report from the USDA obtained by watchdog group Food and Water Watch shows that in a small test project, the industry's procedures failed to catch direct contamination of processed poultry in most instances. For example, employees failed to notice meat literally contaminated with feces.
Oh, that could possibly go wrong.
The public has until the end of April to comment on these new rules. It's fracking versus farmers in Colorado. 98% of Colorado is in drought right now after an unusually warm winter. Now Colorado farmers say they're being outbid for water rights by the booming oil and gas drilling industry in Colorado. That's according to the Denver Post. Millions of gallons of fresh water are required for every new oil or gas well that's drilled, and the price for state water sold at auction has shot up nearly 30% in just the last 2 years. Climate scientists predict that water, already a contentious issue across the West, will become even more scarce, forcing cities, farmers, and drillers to compete for dwindling supplies.
Let the water wars begin.
Finally, a major new study released this week in the journal Nature bolsters the already well-established link that carbon dioxide is the major driver behind the rise in global temperatures. The extremely broad study shows that an increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere caused global warming that pushed the planet out of the last ice age. It then triggered additional rapid natural feedbacks in the climate system that led to even more warming that led to the warm climate we rely on today.
I don't get it. Tracy Burns of Fox Business Channel told me just a few weeks ago,
because the temperature basically hasn't changed much since the ice age.
Yeah, well, she's wrong.
But then just a few weeks before that, Fox News TV weatherman Joe Bastardi told me carbon dioxide can't possibly cause global warming.
CO2 literally cannot cause global warming.
Yeah, well, he's wrong too.
Has Fox News picked up this new study you have?
No, they haven't.
Then I think you're crazy. For more on that crazy study and the stories we didn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report so we can keep telling you the truth over your public airwaves while Fox News lies to you. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
9 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Thorn in the Side Thursday. Dog eat dog. And God knows what else. Yeah, because one of the funny things about Steve King, out there defending animal husbandry, he is now trying to put a smiley face on pink slime. No, really. Interesting email coming in from our buddy Jack in Shreveport. He says, something I've noticed about the usual suspects, Hannity, Scarborough, etc., is their use of the word fear. This is a totally non-scientific observation, but it seems as if they use phrases such as, what I fear is, way more than phrases like, what I'm concerned about is, or what concerns me, or this is troubling, or what I fear is, or what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid you're... Jack notes, I have wondered if that's a tactic used to rile up their base, rather than just evidence of their own emotional orientation. But maybe it's both. And I think it is both. And I think they really are afraid. And there's a difference between vigilance and fear. This is the gut-bending fear thing. Like I said, there are lines open if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366. Let's go and see what's going on the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Oh, okay. Hey, welcome to the program. Nope, okay. So, we will... I need a producer. I hate that. The pink slime story? Yeah, Steve King got paid $45,000 from the meat industry. And, you know, he gets bought and stays bought. That makes him a good politician in the eyes of corporate America. You know, pink slime is beef scraps that used to be sent off to the dog food company that is now fed to humans. These scraps that have been, well, kind of like what Brad was describing in the Green News Report there, coming in contact with all kinds of unsavory things that we don't necessarily want to talk about during the dinner hour. Those scraps that don't have much meat about them, much of it is connective tissue and so forth. It's treated with ammonia hydroxide. And, yes, it turns into goo. It no longer resembles meat. It is pink slime. So, with the affinity that like has for like in the universe, Steve King is advocating in favor of pink slime. Slime is advocating for slime. He has taken more than $45,000 in campaign contributions from the meat industry. This latest campaign cycle, two prominent PACs, the National Beef Cattlemen's Association and the National Council of Pork Producers, Lynch Livestock as well, have all maxed out their contributions to his reelection campaign. By the way, the Orwellian phrase, the Orwellian name for pink slime, lean, finely textured beef. Because I guess by the time it's rendered into slime, it still technically has texture, right? And he's been going to these town halls like the one I played for you where he told the empty chairs about how he was tough on the vegetarians. I made him confess. Confess? Confess is something you do with crime or a sin. And the last I checked, there is no, it is neither criminal nor sinful to be a vegetarian. Lots of people in the world manage to continue being people in the world because they eat a vegetarian diet. And while it's not for me, I freely acknowledge that eating less meat, not more, is a good thing. It just is. If you understand the stuff in the human diet that we need least of versus what we need more of, meat is on that narrower part of the pyramid. The little pointiest part of the pyramid where with the stuff we need the least of is, you know, fats and sugars and stuff, right? But even within that broader rubric of rubric? Sounds like some sort of European prince. Prince Rubric. No, within that broader spectrum of meat generally, pink slime, I don't know how it actually gets into the category, but for Steve King it is. So he runs around Iowa to his little campaign events, and he doesn't even have to be asked about pink slime. He's out there proselytizing for pink slime. And again, it's one of those moments where I get to wonder about the people in his constituency who return him to office. Would you take a congressman's word for it that eating ammonia hydroxide treated scrap cuttings, trimmings, whatever, off of cattle, you know, they have to treat it with the ammonia hydroxide to make it safe for human consumption, right? Would you take his word for it that it's a good thing? Now, just judging by the people in the video here, which you can't see but I can, well, you can if you go and look it up on YouTube or whatever, there's nobody in this audience under probably 50. And that's not any kind of condemnation, it's just a reality. But youth being youth, you gotta wonder what would happen to Steve King if he told a bunch of sixth graders that they needed to eat their pink slime so that he could continue to get campaign contributions from the American Dairymen's Cattle Association. Think they'd laugh? I do.
And by the way, there's a huge fracas going on over the Beef Products Incorporated. It's a pure 100% safe beef that is a supplement and an enhancement to ground beef. I'm on the phone today and throughout the weekend and into last week trying to establish a congressional hearing before the Ag Committee for Beef Products Incorporated so that we can put into the congressional record the nutritional value and the safety and the tastiness of their product, which is an enhancement to hamburger. And that's, and I'm working with Governor Branstad on that. We are, at this point, there may be a decision made, I think, today on whether we're able to get a hearing. And then we're setting up a feast for the Siouxland Chamber that will be out to Washington, D.C. on the 17th through the 19th of April. And we hopefully can do a media event that will raise the profile of the beef. And we're going to Iowa State's campus on Tuesday next week at 2:30 in the afternoon to gin this thing up some more and start to fight back so we can save a good company and save our dietary.
Save our dietary what? Save our diet? Really? Pink slime is our diet? If that's the case, then screw it. Let's just move on into Soylent Green, okay? Here's a hint to Steve King. If you have to argue that eating something is 100% safe, that's generally a pretty good indication that folks don't think it is and don't want it. This will be the second night in a row with a Catch-22 reference. This is Milo Minderbinder trying to get Yossarian to eat the chocolate-covered cotton. Oh, come on, Yossarian, please, won't you? Why are you trying to get me to eat cotton, Milo? I bought too much of it. I ain't got anything I can do. How was I supposed to know there was going to be a glut on the market? You think we could get that? We could serve this to the man in the mess and they'd eat it? What if we ordered them to? How far are we from... really, you think he wouldn't do it? How far are we, do you think, from Steve King telling us that... it is our patriotic duty. To eat pink slime. And we've got to save a good company. I mean, you heard that whole thing, right? You heard the same thing I did. It's perfectly safe to eat. And we've got to save a good company, Beef Products Incorporated. Which is run by a huge Romney donor. No, really, not kidding. Now, how do you avoid pink slime? Well, you could be a vegetarian, which probably would lead to a considerably longer, healthier life. Or, if you continue to eat meat, as I do, you don't buy prepackaged ground beef, because that's where you find the pink slime. Buy it where they grind it. And that way you can ask them, are you putting any finely textured beef product into this? Huh? This is Chuck. Well, Chuck, are you putting it? No. I actually did that. I said, you know this pink slime thing? Oh, yeah, that's disgusting. So I can take it you're not using it here where you grind? No way. I wouldn't eat that stuff, and I wouldn't want y'all to either. That's a butcher. And they grind their own little grocery store up here that we're probably going to lose fairly soon. They grind their own hamburger. They grind some of the most delicious breakfast sausage I've ever. And there's none of those vast seas of grease in it when you fry it up. It's almost as lean as lean hamburger, and it's wonderful. If you're a meat eater, I'm sure there are vegetarians out there going, ah! And turning the. Because it just sounds icky. You know, we kind of have to be conditioned to eat meat. But no, I get my ground beef up there because they grind it every day. And it's fresh, and it doesn't have any pink slime in it. Of course, if Steve King has his way, he says that he's protecting the diet. No, he's trying to force us to eat shit we don't want to eat. Do you want to eat pink slime? I don't want to eat pink slime. I don't want to eat it, even if you call it, what is it again? Lean, finely textured beef. I do not want to eat it in a box. I will not eat it with a fox. I will not eat it on a train. I will not eat it in the rain. I will not eat it. Steve, you dipshit. I will not eat it. I won't. Sorry, I couldn't come up with anything that rhymed with Steve. You guys want to work on that one, too? Hey, John Fox, you're in the chat room. Or you were, dadgummit. Okay, Australian audience. Have y'all heard about the pink slime stuff? Would you eat it in Australia? German audience, would you eat it in Germany? Japan, the rest of Asia, would you eat pink slime? But us, they're going to make us eat it. Yeah, you're right, Benny. Benedict at Large in the chat room. Next up, the meat industry will sue to stop people from using the pink slime free label. Yeah, that's what happened with the with bovine growth hormone. Now this is not to be compared with places where oddments and scraps of meat are used in traditional cooking. It is a far cry between sitting down to a bowl of wonderful Vietnamese pho that contains thin slices of beef tenderloin along with beef tendon. It says it's tendon on the menu. It is a critical and integral part of the recipe. You know, now add the beef tendon. And it adds some character, some sort of chewiness. I can deal with that. I can deal with it because it's about not wasting perfectly edible food. But this pink slime stuff wasn't food in the beginning because it's not fit for consumption by humans. It has to be treated with ammonia hydroxide in order to become consumable. Bill, Cleveland. Bob, tell the truth. We can market this as a diet plan. Just listen to Bob's show at dinner time. David in Tennessee noting, here's Steve King's linchpin. It's safe. If one cooks roadkill and does it with enough stuff to kill the germs, it won't kill you in the next 72 hours. Hence, it is safe. And again, that's where this fear-based Republican culture has taken us. Here as we sit navel-gazing, in April of 2012, we've gone from it tastes good to it won't kill you. Look, it's safe is not my personal benchmark of what makes something good enough to go on, never mind onto the dinner table, but into the bellies of my family. I don't want to consider dinner every day to be some sort of consideration of whether or not something as prosaic as a hamburger is going to have the net effect of eating badly sliced fugu fish. I don't want my dinner to be thrilling. Or suspenseful? Suspenseful dining is not good for the digestive system. Hey, everybody, let's go out to dinner and see if it kills us. This here possum was only on the road for 4 days. If you cook it thoroughly to at least 180 degrees Fahrenheit, you'll be all right. It's safe. Just like pink slime, safe. Ray. Grind your beef every day. You people. Creativity at the very least. Marty, pink slime in a German brat? I hope not. That'll sure keep me out of Munich for Oktoberfest. Yeah, I'm guessing that's not going to go. No. Mm-mm, sorry. There's those words, you know, they come back to haunt us. Jack, hey, Bob, is enhanced beef anything like enhanced interrogation? Yeah, if a Republican's doing the enhancing, I don't want whatever it is they've enhanced. Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, I can see it now. Tonight's secret ingredient on Iron Chef, lean, finely textured beef. The pink slime episode. Ray said, when I worked in meatpacking, They always told us that none of the cow gets wasted. Always thought they were talking about The View. But it really didn't, because the parts that were not for human consumption, truthfully, got shuffled off to the, you know, the dog food plant. Kim noting, it sounds like the regulations for dog and cat food are more stringent than for a human. Time to start getting canned cat food and making cat burgers from Fancy Cat. That's a good brand, I guess. Isaac says, you know, I've always wondered how Rally's Hamburgers was able to sell their hamburgers so cheap. Pink slime product? Wouldn't be surprised. If corporate America can get away with it, that's the point. They will do it. And so you have to ask questions of corporate. Dear corporate, do you use pink slime in your Rally burgers? But you also have to be careful and use the industry phrase, finely textured lean beef. Please advise. Because if you just ask them pink slime, no pink slime. We do eat it. Slippery that way. Of course, so is pink slime. You know how I feel about high fructose corn syrup. I got sent on an errand up to the grocery store the other day for pancake syrup. Pancake syrup! And I, short of the $19 pint of pure maple syrup, came from Wisconsin. Short of that, Aunt Jemima, Mrs. Butterworth, Log Cabin, store brand, off brand, other brand, every single bottle. The ingredients list began either water, high fructose corn syrup, or high fructose corn syrup, water. And the funny thing is, the stuff's expensive as hell. So what they're doing is they're putting this stuff on the shelves. They're charging you the price that you would pay if it was made with sugar, but they're cutting their own costs by giving you high fructose corn syrup that will absolutely set your pancreas on fire and pocketing the difference. You know, because daddy needs a new Ferrari. Not that I've got anything against Ferraris, but there are legitimate ways of obtaining them and illegitimate ones. Guess which one this is. Ray, the loving spouse of Kim, who just wrote about the cat food, said, "Oh, great! Thanks to the horn, I'll be eating effing dog food." You know, don't shoot the messenger. Would pink slime pass the Gordon Ramsay test? Marty? I don't know. I think the real question is, if she was paid sufficient amounts of money, could Paula Deen come up with some way to fry or saute or poach or otherwise prepare pink slime in such a way as to make her followers say, Paula, can I get grits with that? Dadgummit. Rub it in, David. Rub it in. Here in my state, we have Log Cabin Original. It's $5 a pint and made with only sugar. Scoreboard, Tennessee. But and see, Sandra pointed out the other night, she said, "Oh, you're entering the food desert." Yes, we are. The poorer a community is, the less likely it is to have quality stuff available to it. Bear in mind, it wasn't just my little grocery store up the road. I stood in Kroger's the other day. You know, Kroger's, really, Kroger's. And I checked one out down the river, because I had to stop at the grocery store on the way home from Charleston today. It's not like I'm on some sort of pancake syrup crusade, and I don't particularly need to be eating a lot of pancake syrup. But, you know, I'd like to find these kind of things out. The ice cream bars. The ice cream. Pancake syrup. Ketchup, for Christ's sakes. But at least I can get the non-HFCS tomato ketchup. But no, the Log Cabin Original is not on the shelves, David. Would that it were. I like a pancake now and then. Of course, it's more then than now, since I started stabbing myself in the end of the finger twice a day. And I'm not going to complain. It's partially a self-inflicted wound. Eating, because I've been out there eating that diet that Steve King wants me to eat. Honest to God, these rotten bastards are going to turn me into a vegetarian yet. And you know what? It pisses me off to no end. Because, you know, you don't think about things on the day-to-day basis. I don't want to expend as much time thinking about a hamburger as the time that I've expended discussing it this evening. I want to eat the damn hamburger. Hand me the Heinz 57. Oh, hell, it's got high fructose corn syrup in it. Never mind. And be satisfied and happy. Good luck. And maybe that's why sometimes I worry about the program being a downer. I don't mean for it to be. I mean, if nothing else, we will laugh a lot. We will laugh merrily, you know, down the chute. But the corporations and their lackeys, their paid lackeys in government are, in addition to being agents of fear, they're also, we're not allowed to enjoy things unless we enjoy them in the way that they insist and provide them the greatest degree of profit. The hamburger became an iconic symbol of the rise of post-World War II America. And they ruined it. They just ruined it. Because done well, it's yummy. Done poorly, it's McDonald's. So there you go. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Do I have a phone problem this evening? I don't know. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Chris in Nanaimo.
Oh, hey, Chris. Good. I'm glad somebody was on. Good. For a minute there, I thought the phone system was gone to hell.
No. Yeah, I was on earlier, but I had to go pick up the little one. I kind of thank you, Mr. Segway, for segwaying from fetuses and birth defects to pink slime. And why do I feel the compulsion to prepare the three meat products in my fridge today?
I'm just handy that way.
You were talking the other day about 3D printers. There's some real neat info about that. It's sort of like the replicator and all that. Right now we're at sort of the Atom computer stage, you know, where in the manual it says pick up 1 inch, drop an inch if it doesn't work the first time.
Right.
Really working on the ground floor of it. But, you know, we've been through this before on a technological development. We know what's next and where we're going and what we need to work on next. Right now, there's a 3D printer out there on Kickstarter. I'll get into that in a bit. But they're looking for $20,000 to start up a little company to make 3D printers. The interest, however, was so great that they pulled in about $1 million. And they have back orders for the next couple of years. The 3D printers are kind of neat because right now we're at the stage where we can print one or the other. There's some very advanced printers that can print out many types of plastic. Most of them are plastic printers, but there's metal printers out there, too. There's also collagen printers, which is what they did on TED Talks a little while ago. They printed off a kidney. They literally just did an MRI, some guy, took out all the structural information on what the kidney looked like, passed it into the printer, it printed off a collagen kidney. They will seed it with some, they showed it on TED, the little floppy kidney thing, grossest thing you ever seen. They're going to seed it with stem cells and plug it into some guy. Not the one they were showing, that's not sterile anymore, but, you know, they'll do it again. And it only takes about 8 hours to print off a given organ. One, it'll get faster, and two...
Whole organs?
Organs, yes, kidney. They're basically at the point now where, you know, with, for lack of chutzpah, they're capable of printing off any organ, well, except brain tissue. Well, you could probably do brain tissue, too. It's just, it's not collagen. It's not structurally based. It's neurologically, it's cellularly based. The heart has a structure of collagen, which helps support itself. The muscles actually work against its collagen structure. Kidneys, ditto. It's circulatory.
Yeah, sort of an isometric kind of.
Well, any organ that has structure, think cow and think, oh, there's a piece of kidney, and it's sort of kidney shaped. It doesn't, you know, turn into goo in your hand or something. That's got collagen in it to keep its structure. Ditto a liver, less so. They've been printing off colons because these things are apparently terrifyingly difficult to acquire, and they're in terms of the transplant process, because if you're going to transplant, it's coming out of somebody who's, you know, used it at some point. So it's very hard to get it out in a sterile condition.
Right.
They don't even try anymore. They tried, but it doesn't work. Having your ass up and fall off one day is, you know, a recipient is not exactly a joyous love.
No. And what a lovely transition. The fetus's pink slime.
Yes, it was a colonoscopy.
Falling out colons.
Yeah. I've seen 3D printers that print off on getting back away from the gross stuff. The 3D printers, the ones I've seen, there's some that have multiple plastic, multiple hitters. It's sort of like having a color printer versus a black and white. It's using the exact same technologies we have in our laser jets. So there are more complicated and contrarily more expensive printers out there that print off multiple colors of plastic. And with a printer, I don't know how much you know about machining technology, but there are things you can print layer by layer and build it up in three dimensions that you literally cannot build, that wouldn't work for cast, wouldn't work. There's no molding technology in the universe that could possibly make it. They're making some really funky radiators out there for transiting heat from one substance to another that just can't be made in any other way, and they're stupidly efficient.
Wow.
Everything is custom. The real thing that's just going to be nice in the heart of is Walmart, because anybody can do groceries. Groceries are simple, but everything else at Walmart, everything else at the Quickie Mart, everything else at all these places, that cheap plastic crap can all now be made at home. And the patterns for that.
And can it? And I guess the question is, Chris, can it be made in America?
There's no way you couldn't make it in America. It's at your location. Actually, the 3D printers are so good, some of them.
So does this represent a future step back from so-called globalization?
I wouldn't say globalization. I'd say industrialization. Doesn't really work against global. It works against industrialization, the centralization, the plant you were talking about before, where, you know, a guy went off to work at the plant. Well, it's another word for plantation. And that just disappears. You're back to the workman in a workshop doing something. Now, you're going to get the designers, the artists, and all that. Treat the files that these things will use the same way as you think of a movie today. You download them, and point of fact, they're almost exactly the same size. A big file would be a big thing with lots of complicated widgets, lots of different components. You'd have to assemble it yourself, but by and large, you're looking at downloading it just like a torrent or any other major binary file. And you'd download them, and for big ones, you have a big one, little ones, you have a little one, and you'd have a Pirate Bay. Pirate Bay will probably still be around, and it'll be working in movies and 3D printer files. Which, hell, you could probably set it up as a PDF file if you really wanted to.
Wow.
And that's basically, it can transpose. And all of a sudden, anybody who has one, you probably have a printer just for plastics and a printer just for metals. And maybe if you're really, really well-to-do, you have one that could do all three at the same time. I think only the doctors should probably have a collagen printer. But the only thing that really differentiates these things...
Yeah, but you know they won't be the only ones who have one, right?
Well, yeah. And then you get the guy printing out 8 kidneys because, hey, now I can drink even more. And you forget...
Or Dick Cheney's out there. Now I can slaughter even... Now I can slaughter even more brown people.
Christ. Well, it pretty much undercuts the entire organ leg industry, which is just starting to get really underway. To wit, Cheney. I do not know where he got his heart. The other thing is the ones that print off metal. It's really kind of interesting. Certain metal products need to be polished, need to be brushed. You will not get fine tools out of these things. The resolution has to be worked on. They're pretty good right now, but they're not perfect. You get down to the level of the cast based on a major piece of tooling or equipment. If you've got a grinder at home or a stand for a drill press, that level, that grainy, sandy look,
mm-hmm.
is about as good as further polishing it off with a demo moto tool or something like that. There's also a neat project that in the 3D printer realm that a guy took his 3D printer out to the middle of the desert, in the middle of, I think it was the Western Sahara, I mean, as remote a place as you can get. They dropped him off, and he made himself a whole bunch of bowls and artistic things out of sand he threw on it, and it used collected sunlight to melt the sand together.
Oh, wow. So why, Chris, let me just ask you, and this is sort of a broader question, non-technical in nature. Why is it we hear, why do you think, for instance, the for-profit media are more interested in repeating Republican talking points, say, about pink slime, than bringing us stories like this that actually provide a fleeting glimpse, albeit though it is, of a hopeful future?
Well,
I mean, this is exciting stuff. I'd never heard of this until Sandra mentioned it the other night, and I started watching videos, and it's like, crap, you know, this technology isn't even in its infancy anymore.
No, it's really kind of neat. Again, because we've been through this before, all these infancies, they're like, oh, let's sit back in awe at what we've done and then move on. It's like a day and a half instead of a year. We're going from the Atom computer to the MacBook in, like, 5 years at most. We're probably going to have this stuff pretty perfected. Now, the trick is all the source material, the plastics. Most people aren't used to dealing with plastics. Just like people are going to have to get used to working with CDs. Then it got used to working with DVDs. Now they're getting used to working with Blu-rays. It's the same kind of technological increase. It's just one more thing to put in your...
And, you know, it's good to know that the members of the Horn family are out there thinking about the real practicalities of this stuff. Just had an email in from Ray. This is going to be great for the sex industry, he says.
Yeah.
Well, it will. I mean, the blow-up doll will no longer fly out the window when you bite her in the neck.
Arg. I'm probably...
That's one of Jim's. I'm just repeating, so...
Be allowed to work with the collagen depositor. Just so you can get away from the guy doing the ballistic gel stuff.
Well, no, you know, the story that we had last night and referenced a little bit earlier this evening, the lovely woman from Canada, Jenna Talikova, post-op transsexual, this will revolutionize that, won't it? I mean, it won't just be a matter of cosmetic surgery. I mean, we can have you could have full on that kind of stuff.
Actually, I know of at least two cases where they found people born after the fact that most of their cells were actually their mothers, and only a small fraction of their cells were combinations of their mothers and fathers. So the possibility of people existing with genetic dysmorphia already happened. It's naturally occurring. The cell divided. It started dividing before the sperm hit the egg, and only his left arm is his father's and his mother's. But the rest of his cell is his mother's, or her mother's, whatever. I didn't really get the gender. There wasn't a lot of details in the story due to privacy concerns. But this already happened. So just taking your own, instead of doing the normal, oh, let's take a few skin cells, turn them into stem cells, and plop them back into the kidney, Now we print off 8 or 9 genitalia, take out that extra Y chromosome. Now the girl has genitalia all around. She can, you have insufficient orifices.
And can you imagine sooner or later the Vatican will have to opine, and they'll hate it, and the right wing will hate it. Oh, we're playing God.
Man, from what we've been hearing about the Vatican lately, they're probably being freaking lying. So, Pope, you're in this lineup. You do realize the Holy Spirit? Oh, yes, I've heard about the wonderful devices in any flavorful city. Like something out of Naked Lunch.
True.
Actually, Jesus, if that whole typewriter thing he had in Naked Lunch is possible. Oh, Christ. Brave New World. I wanted to bring up this other thing, this whole new site, sort of social-economic combo site. Sort of like eBay and its profundity. Somebody actually set it up. It didn't require a lot of, you know, mental horsepower to set up eBay, but somebody had to do it first, and usually the first one wins. Somebody did it with this as well, called Kickstarter. Kickstart and then ER, .com. It's a crowdsourced funding device. You have a neat idea. You put together a perspective, a business plan, what you're going to do, and then there's like 8 or 9 different funding options. If you contribute $20 to this, you'll get a bumper sticker. If you contribute $100 to this, you'll get a T-shirt. $1,000, you'll get a 3D printer and a bumper sticker and all the other things, blah, 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 blah. That's how the 3D printer project got started. One of the big ones is that the guy said, oh, I need $20,000 to set up a few printers, and he set up a whole bunch of things. Look, if you pay $500, $600, you'll get yourself a 3D printer. And they had it broken down, and he now has the $20,000 he's looking for and about $900,000 more, and orders until the end of his life.
Wow.
The neat thing about the printers is that once you've got one and it's a good quality one, one printer can make another.
So you really can.
One other printer that affects the 3D printers is called CNC building blocks. Basically, a 3D printer is just a CNC device, computer numerical control device, with a controller and a printer head. And what that printer head prints, it depends on your application, whether it prints collagen, calcium, inks, plastic, steel, titanium. It depends on your application and your ability to maintain the environment. Also, your design sort of change. Say you want to make a whole bunch of flat surfaces like radiator fins. If it's out of a weak material, you may need something to support those. So you end up having fillers, like little pellets to hold it up while you're building up this flat plane, and you end up at a very microscopic level, you get very steep curves, but you can never actually have anything truly flat. Again, a lot of this requires finishing, polishing, that sort of thing. But design-wise, there's certain limitations on it, but you know, it allows for things that you can't otherwise do in regular construction with tool and die manufacturing. But the CNC building blocks, that's addressing, with Kickstarter, one of the limitations on the 3D printers is these, you know, very precise motors and guides that help guide the printer head back and forth or move the workpiece depending on which style they're working with. Yeah, I have no idea what that means. The other one I thought you might be interested in, I'd love to hear you do some background on this because you know these people better than I do, is called Frack Nation on Kickstarter. They're trying to get backers for a documentary on gas fracking.
Wow.
And, like, oh, that's lovely. You might want to look that one up. It's a documentary project in Los Angeles, California by Ann and Phelim Media, LLC. Well, you can look it up on Kickstarter. And
okay, if you don't care, shoot me a note because I'm not particularly familiar with Kickstarter.
No problem. I'll send you some links.
Okay, cool.
I got them broken up by art, comics, dance, design, fashion, film and video, food, games, music, photography, publishing, technology, and theater. They also have it broken up by cities you can do it by, and they got staff picks, popular, ending soon, most funded, small projects, recently launched. You can sort them out by a whole bunch of things. Community markets are being funded this way, graphic novels, games, you know, the whole nine yards. And
anything in there about liberal radio networks?
That's what I was going to bring up as a second point. You know, if you wanted that whole, let's make this, you know, liberal radio talk show of, off of the grid and all that, that'd be the place to do it. Because it doesn't mean you activate until you actually get to the funding commitment. All these things are pledges. They can be put in, they can be taken out. You're not really committed to them until the project actually, bang, closes. At which point, you've already pledged, now you're committed, transfers all the funds at once, minimizes the amount of transactions that go against the... So there's no overhead for the project. A little bit of overhead for the pledger, but none for the project itself.
Wow.
And
That deserves study.
Yeah, just, again, something to think about. But it's like, you know, if I knew about eBay and I didn't tell you, I'd feel kind of remiss. You know, something out there should be known. It's sort of like a universal yard sale. There's also something that's been coming up in liberal talkers, and I've been hitting this with Mike, yourself on occasion, and about a dozen others I listen to. Everybody's asking, you know, why do we do this? Why do you even tune in? And, you know, and I'm getting to this point. I've been reading a book by Alain de Botton, nice French guy. He wrote the book Religion for Atheists, The Uses of Religion. His posit is that atheism is just a first step, and that there are useful things like repetitive learning, things that are taught again and again, moralistic education, things like this that, you know, we've secularized poorly. He's, again, given a talk on TED, and I recommend you look him up. But I'm wondering if, and, you know, you can address this at your own speed, you think in a secular society, talk radio takes the place of church to the religious. I mean, it's repeating regular morals, talking about things of the day, talking about life values, how to live, suggestions, not really dictating, it's not pushy.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you raised the topic within that framework, Chris, because I am a product of my upbringing. And people have said, I've gotten emails over the years, you know, why do you do things this way? Why don't you do it that way? Why isn't it more like a news show? And, you know, this concept of conversation radio evolved out of my Southern upbringing in conjunction with my, you know, the fact that I'm, my presentation style has a lot to do with the fact that I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. It's the way oratory, it's not the way oratory was taught, it's just the way you learn. It's the same reason that, not that I'm comparing, no, I better not do it that way, but it's the same reason that it's organic, I guess, is what I'm saying.
There, you. All right, not you.
Yeah, so. But the fact, yeah, it's kind of like psychoanalysis. Psychoanalysis is confession for people who don't do Roman Catholicism. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I think you absolutely are on the right track.
Well, I was just thinking one more thing. Religion is not necessarily end-all and be-all. I mean, the church, the apparatus of the church, people getting together to hear a sermon on a regular basis, is not something that's absolutely perfected. There are other parts, like the art of conversation. Where do we get to go to talk to someone who's not intimately related to us, an immediate neighbor, a fellow employee, or someone else who has a power relation who will sit with us? I mean, there's a tab. I mean, you go to the library and they all go, shh, you know, be quiet in the library. Go to class while you're disrupting class. Next time you go to church, try raising your hand. See how well that goes over. You go to City Hall while you're disrupting our proceedings, you know, because, you know, we're more important than you are. I agree with that. But.
Yeah.
And you go to a city park and try to discuss it with like-minded people. Oh, God, the riot squad is called out, the SWAT team, oh, it's occupiers, quick, beat the living crap out of them. Because they, you know, a bunch of like-minded, nice people want to discuss things that are interesting to them. And there's literally nowhere else to go. So since the right wing has decided to die as that, I was thinking, you know, we could possibly co-opt the entire architecture of religion without mimicking any of its stupid byproducts. You know?
In many ways, I think that's what happens, Chris. Hey, Chris, I got to roll on, but broad range of fascinating stuff. I'll look for those links if you can send them along.
I'll send them right away. Cheers.
All right, take care. Bye now. Our buddy Chris calling from Canada. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Betsy's son, Lucas.
Oh, hey, Lucas, how you doing? I had a heads up from your mom that you might be calling.
Yeah. I've been vegetarian for about 5 years now and vegan for about 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it has to do with the way that animal products are produced in this country. Even the, like, products that are claimed to be, like, free-range, like the chicken, free-range just means there has to be a window on the factory. There's not actually any humane connotation with any of the way the animals are raised or slaughtered.
Right, and I was reading about an issue. In fact, my daughter brought it up to me just the other day about so-called organic milk. About the fact that the dairy cows producing the organic milk, it qualifies as organic, and yet at the same time there are some qualms about it because the dairy cows are still being fed corn. Well, I don't want my dairy cows eating anything but hay.
Yeah.
Because cattle, by virtue of the way they are, their physiology, their biology, are not meant to process grain. That's why they've got two or three stomachs and they chew the cud and all of that stuff. And so, yeah, it's an open question on how appropriate that is. Then there's stuff like bovine growth hormone that just makes me go, yuck. And which is incidentally banned in other so-called civilized countries.
Yeah. Beyond like the production though, there's a lot of health risks associated with eating meat. If you're familiar with the China study, there's a lot of, most types of cancer can be attributed to eating a certain type of meat or animal product.
There's no doubt that a massively meaty diet contributes, for instance, to the high incidences of colon cancer.
Have you read the China study?
I don't know exactly what that is, so I'm presuming I haven't.
So basically, because in rural China the diets are so isolated. And the Chinese records are so good, they compiled all of the cancer cases for about 30 years. And looking at the diets for the regions that the cancer was originating from, they were able to actually attribute certain types of cancer to certain elements of diet and a certain foods. And so they were actually able to show a correlation between exactly what foods cause which types of cancer.
And, the problem we run across is that as human beings, we have nutritional needs. And some of those nutritional needs cannot be met except by some form of meat. But we're not supposed to be a primarily carnivorous creature. We are omnivores. We eat everything. You've got to have roughage. You've got to have grain. That's neither right nor wrong. It's just the nature of human evolution.
Yeah.
Protein sources. There are cultures that have not had a lot of protein sources that were still very successful cultures because, well, and for instance, that particularly applies to the New World cultures, where they had beans to supplant their protein needs. And part of the reason that here next week, I hope we're going to be having the author that I've been talking a lot about, Charles C. Mann. I hope we're going to be having him on the program to talk a little bit about his work in the book 1493. There was a population explosion in Europe and Asia that flowed directly from maize becoming available in those cultures where it had not been before because it is much more nutritionally complete.
Yeah. Well, it's just like the boom in population in Egypt when they discovered that they could grow wheat along the Nile. And
right.
They were able to support a much larger population.
Hunter-gatherer societies tend to have fewer children. And then the more protein you add to the diet, the larger the populations tend to get. And what we're seeing now with industrialized food, you may see a backward trend because it's unsustainable. I think that's my one of my biggest beefs about gripes about the industrial food process, Lucas, is the industrial food process.
So much energy put into every pound of meat that's produced that it's just
absolutely
it's not energy efficient in any means by any means.
No, it is not in the least. You know, when you and just the grossness of the CAFOs, the contained animal feed operations, those massive slaughter pens in places like Nebraska, or the hog slaughter outfits. I think the world's biggest one is in Mexico, and the second biggest one in the world is in Tar Heel, North Carolina. They are ecological nightmares. Because the waste that they produce is unbearable. It is literally ecologically unbearable and becomes an absolute test breeding ground for new diseases. So that, no, there are like I said, there the industry itself is pushing me toward eating less meat as opposed to any other sort of ideological concerns. Some of it just feels wrong. Of course, the other side of that is like with free range chickens. There's been a lot of studies done where even if you've got a door so the chickens can get out and go scratch in the yard and stuff, they won't leave. They stay where they are. And why that is hasn't been fully understood, but a lot of it. I remember reading about it in Michael Pollan's magnificent work, The Omnivore's Dilemma. So that even if you let them go out and wander around, they generally don't want to. Which, oddly enough, I drove through a McDonald's on the way down to Charleston today, and lo and behold, there was a chicken scratching in the shrubbery that surrounded the McDonald's, and I thought, well, they're sourcing closer to home now.
Well, I think a lot of the demand on the meat market also stems from, like, there's a really common misconception that you can't get enough protein if you don't eat meat, but pretty much they're all plant eating, or not, pretty much all of them, none of them eat meat. They all have protein, and their meat all has protein. So they're all getting it from somewhere. The meat market has really been trying to play up this idea that you're not going to be able to get enough protein if you don't eat meat, but that's...
No, I think that's a complete fallacy. You can get all the protein you need from beans and a few other foods as well. It's other nutritional elements that are harder to come by. For instance, I mentioned it just in passing earlier this evening. There is an amino acid that is critical, and I pay attention to things like pancreatic health because I've had issues. It's called carnitine, carne, meat, and it's available only through meat products, and your pancreas needs it. It's not nutritionally available in other sources. The easiest way is just to take a supplement with it, which I do. But that's a larger concern. No, people can be quite healthy being vegetarian. Now me, I'm not so crazy about the and this is just my personal preference, Lucas. I'm not so crazy about veganism. I certainly understand vegetarianism. Veganism is just a for me a bridge too far.
Well, initially I only wanted to try it out for a very short period of time, but it was pretty incredible to me just how fast I started feeling better. I've been vegan for about 8 months now, and I've lost 45 pounds, which may not be healthy, but there's just like an incredible boost of energy when you eliminate a lot of the dairy, at least the dairy products are the big part for me.
What about things like what do you do to replace like heart healthy oils? Things that you would get say from a piece of salmon.
Like omega-3.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
There's a lot of there's a product called Smart Balance, which is a margarine type thing, which has all of your daily value of omega-3, fat, trans fatty acid, and there's a lot of it in wheat gluten, which I eat a lot of as a protein source, but it also has
omega-3 added to it.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, do you find did you have to do a lot of research when you made the transition just to make sure that you did stay nutritionally complete?
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of I had to kind of pick out which vitamins and minerals and I wouldn't be getting, and I had to figure out which ways to supplement them. But after the first couple weeks, you just kind of figure out what you need to be eating daily, and that helped a lot.
So you think this is something you're going to stick with?
I think at least for a couple years, at least through college, I think I will. After that point, I may need to start adjusting my diet once my body stops growing, but at this point, I think it's working fine.
Cool. Well, I don't know where my diet is going to take me. It's hard. Well, old habits die hard. And some of the things that I enjoy the most are meat based. The things you don't think about, the eggs in a cake, for instance. You know what I mean. But honest to God, every pink slime story, every E. coli egg story, it really does. It pushes down a little bit more on my desire to consume it. It is ethical. It's an ethical issue for me, but in a larger sense, it's got a protest quality to it. Of not wanting to participate. And granted, I'm just one person, but hopefully it has some degree of meaning. And by the way, Ray wrote in a little bit ago, Lucas, and he said, if you're trying to get a show on the Food Channel, this ain't the way to do it. Lucas, it's good to hear from you. I'm glad you called.
Thank you.
You have a good evening.
You too.
All right, bye now. Son of the Horn's official Jewish mother, that's Lucas. Betsy being our blogger and official reference for all things Jewish and kosher, and she does a fine job of it. The chicken at McDonald's was Ronald McDonald's date. Thank you, Ray. By the way, just to flesh things out a little bit, this is the same McDonald's that I've had such an ongoing adventure with, and yes, they screwed up the smoothies again today. One pineapple mango, one strawberry banana, and one wild berry. I was the wild berry. We ain't got no wild berry goo today. I'm not kidding. Kim, by the way, she said, I'm sorry for Ray's giddiness tonight. I took him to Culver's for supper tonight. He ate a deluxe burger. He must have a pink slime buzz right now. I don't think you've got any worries about pink slime at Culver's. I'm guessing, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm guessing you don't. That's right, rub it in, Culver's. We do not have them here. It's a six-hour drive to the nearest Culver's for me. I don't know, maybe there's some in Ohio that are closer, but I think about the one in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Ever since I discovered it, I stopped there. Cheese curds. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Keeps happening. Oh, well. Lines are open 26 minutes before the end of this evening's program. And just to... let's see. No, okay, we got rid of that. Yeah, we dealt with that sexist creep, and we dealt with that sexist creep. Oh, yeah, yeah. I wanted to make sure, since this is Thorn in the Side Thursday. I don't know if this is going to be too much inside baseball or too technical. I'll try. I hope it won't be. But are you familiar with this brewing flap between the Obama administration and this crazy-ass U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals judge for the Fifth Circuit down in Texas? I just became aware of it, and it is absolutely amazing. We are talking about a circuit court judge for the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which is based in Houston, Texas, Stan. And his name is Jerry Edwin Smith. He's from Del Rio, Texas. He was appointed to the United States Circuit Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit by Ronald Reagan. He has been on the court since December 1987, so 25 years he's been screwing up the judiciary in the Fifth Circuit, which, what is that, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas maybe, I'm not sure, is Mississippi in the Fifth, is Alabama in the Fifth? The Fifth and the Eleventh, some of the Fifth was split up to form the Eleventh Circuit, if I recall correctly. Maybe I'm wrong. He's a Yalie, and he thinks really highly of himself. He was city attorney for Houston, Texas. He was the director of the Harris County Housing Authority, and he's a jackass. I mean, gold, double-plated, chromium and zircon encrusted jackass. Here's what he has made himself famous for. He's the author of the majority opinion in Hopwood versus Texas, a 1996 case out of the Fifth Circuit. That's where the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals struck down affirmative action for use in admissions at the University of Texas School of Law. He also wrote the panel opinion, get this, in Corrosion Proof Fittings versus EPA in 1991. That required the United States Environmental Protection Agency to use cost-benefit analysis when deciding whether to ban a toxic substance. Bear in mind, this is the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, right? It's not the Business Protection Agency. It's not the Profit Protection Agency. The only mission of the Environmental Protection Agency is to protect the environment. So in deciding to ban a toxic substance, we're not going to go into all the minutiae of the case. This guy, remember, we don't like it when judges legislate from the bench unless they're doing it for us in the way we like it. This guy told the United States EPA to quit protecting the environment and instead engage in cost-benefit analysis. You know what cost-benefit analysis is, right? Cost-benefit analysis is that process whereby we determine how many American people we are willing to have die in order before we deem it too costly to how many deaths are too many deaths, for instance, in this case, from toxic substances. This is that guy. This is how he thinks. He thinks that he made it legally required for the Environmental Protection Agency to do some sort of Solomonic baby-splitting math whereby they condemn a certain number of people to grim goddamn death before they can say that we ought not be using something. He also stepped in way back before we called him the 1% in 2007. He stepped in to insist that securities fraud claims can't be brought against third parties who actually aided in securities fraud. You know, bunko artists. Wall Street bunko artists. That was Regents of the University of California versus Credit Suisse First Boston. That decision was upheld by the Supreme Court. So, as long as you don't directly mislead investors, but you participate in a bunko scam that rips them off, you are immune from prosecution thanks to Jerry Edwin Smith, the Honorable Jerry Edwin Smith. He's also part of the panel of the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals that struck down the Obama administration's attempt to put a moratorium on exploratory drilling in deep water in the Gulf of Mexico after the BP Horizon disaster. Yeah, he's the drill baby drill judge. So this guy is anything but a nonpartisan adjudicator of facts and law, and a reviewer in the case of the circuit court. You know, the circuit court's job, you know, they don't review new evidence. They just take the transcript from the court below, and they look over it and make sure that the court did everything right procedurally and substantively. And if they did, they say they uphold the case, and if they didn't, they send it back for either retrial or further action or some In other words, they're not supposed to be making law. Yeah, we hear that from the right wing all the time. Judge-made law is bad law. We don't need these activist judges on our courts. Implicit in that statement from the right wing is, unless the activism is activism that we like. And this guy does activism that the right wing loves. So lo and behold, he's decided, this Honorable Jerry Edwin Smith, he's decided that he wants to start a fight with the Obama administration. Not kidding. He ordered the Justice Department. Now, this is after President Obama made remarks in which he criticized judicial overreach. You know, judges going out there and doing stuff they ought not be doing, like the way the right-wingers on the Supreme Court of the United States handled the Affordable Care Act arguments. With that son of a fascist, Antonin Scalia, for instance, "You don't expect us to read all 2,700 pages, do you?" "Oh, Judge, yeah, we kind of do. That's your job, and you're very well paid, and you've got clerks, and I don't see any reason why you shouldn't be able to, unless you're just hateful and lazy." So lo and behold, out of nowhere rides the Honorable Jerry Edwin Smith, protector of bunko artists, protector of white privilege admission in law schools, protector of poisoners. And he authors an order, to the Justice Department of the United States, your Justice Department, to write him a three-page, single-spaced memo on whether or not President Obama understands the concept of judicial review. The nerve. The appropriate response would have been for the Obama administration to ignore it, because this Jerry Edwin Smith creep has besmirched the dignity of his office by trying to create a political PR fracas with the executive branch. Can you imagine what would happen or would have happened if a so-called liberal judge, and there's no such thing as a liberal judge, by the way, I've explained that in the past, if a liberal judge would have compelled the Bush, John Yoo or Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez, Torture Mata, to write such a memo, as it, you know, like some sort of little thing that you write a hundred times on the blackboard. The right-wing hissy would have been stunning. Stunning hell, it would have been non-stop. It would have been unending. It would have gone on and on and on. They would have demanded his impeachment. And conduct by a judge like this, it gives you a gentle reminder of how broken our system is. This man, for nonpartisan reasons, just like the judge who passed around, the federal judge out in California or wherever it was, who passed around, was it California? Who passed around the joke about Obama's mother having sex with a dog. Yeah, Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Another Republican appointee, of course. Impeachment proceedings should have begun against him something resembling immediately in the House of Representatives, which is where such things have to originate. That's not to say that the democratically controlled Senate Judiciary Committee couldn't haul his right-wing ass up in front of them and make him testify, which I think would be appropriate. Anybody want to do some research on who runs the Senate Judiciary Committee? Oh, that's Pat Leahy, isn't it? Yeah, he let himself be slapped around by Dick Cheney, so don't look for any subpoenas to be going out to Judge Jerry Edwin Smith. By the way, it was also the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that commanded the cheerleader who was compelled to cheer for her rapist. It was the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that ordered her to pay the school board's attorney's fees. This happened 2 days ago. Chief Judge Edith Jones, who screamed at one of the progressive judges, telling him to shut up and asked him if he'd like to leave the courtroom. And that's just a history of the Fifth Circuit. But this is the account of the tantrum by Judge Smith. When a lawyer for the Justice Department began arguing before the judges, Appeals Court Judge Jerry Smith immediately interrupted, asking if DOJ agreed that the judiciary could strike down an unconstitutional law. Smith then became very stern, the source said, telling the lawyers arguing the case it was not clear to many of us whether the president believes such a right exists. The other two judges on the panel, Emilio Garza and Leslie Southwick, both Republican appointees, remained silent. Smith, a Reagan appointee, went on to say that comments from the president and others in the executive branch indicate that they believe judges don't have the power to review laws and strike those that are unconstitutional, specifically referencing Mr. Obama's comments yesterday about judges being an unelected group of people. Well, pursuant to the terms of Article 3 of the Constitution of the United States, they are an unelected group of people. After argument, the Republican panel then ordered the attorney to produce a 3-page, single-spaced letter explaining that courts do have the power to strike down federal laws. And this was all a hissy about President Obama. They would never have said something about they would never have done this with Bush. And it's, you know, this was just an assistant U.S. attorney. And it wasn't about the Affordable Care Act. This out-of-control judge was using someone else's life-and-death case. All cases are life and death, even if they're not capital punishment. They really are. Nobody ever thinks he or she has a small case. They all matter. The transcript. Does the Department of Justice recognize that federal courts have the authority in appropriate circumstances to strike federal statutes because of one or more constitutional infirmities? Well, yes, Your Honor, of course. There would need to be a severability analysis, but yes. I'm referring to statements by the President in the past few days to the effect that it is somehow inappropriate for what he termed unelected judges to strike. Because, see, that's not the first time unelected judge has ever been bandied about. The right wing uses that phrase constantly. They hate it, however, when it gets thrown back in their own filthy faces. I would like to have from you by noon on Thursday a letter stating what is the position of the Attorney General and the Department of Justice in regard to the recent statements by the President, stating specifically and in detail, in reference to those statements, what the authority is of the federal courts in this regard in terms of judicial review. That letter needs to be at least 3 pages, single-spaced, no less, and it needs to be specific. It needs to make specific reference to the President's statements and, again, to the position of the Attorney General. It had nothing to do with the case at bar. But we have a dysfunctional country and a dysfunctional government that does not have the ability to remove black-robed filth like that from the bench. So rather than that lawyer having to write that memo, Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, responded personally. You can look it up. It's Think Progress has a copy, and it is it's a 3-page brief laying out exactly what the standards of judicial review are. Which, interestingly, if you go and read the whole thing, the Supreme Court wasn't doing a very good job of, because they said nothing about the deference that is due to Congress in passing a law. The whole letter, 3 pages long, closes as follows. The President's remarks were fully consistent with the principles described herein. Sincerely, Eric H. Holder, Jr., Attorney General. Which is a very polite way of saying, suck on it, Your Honor. Andy in California noting, EPA cost-benefit analysis, Jerry Edwin Smith. A cost-benefit analysis is what the bean counters do. It's a methodology used by the finance folks on the other side of the table. The EPA is supposed to protect us from the bean counters, not buttress their argument. A corporate finance cost-benefit analysis to assess profitability should be irrelevant to protecting the citizenry. What a son of a bitch this justice is, Jerry Edwin Smith. He's turning the function and mission of the EPA on its ear, so it's ineffective doing the bidding of the business community. Do we want Ford Pintos to continue exploding into flames or rear-end collisions, even though a cost-benefit analysis shows the fix is more expensive than paying damages for each citizen burned to a crisp? Jerry Edwin Smith is trying to single-handedly dismantle the EPA. An activist judge, you bet your life, a pure pro-business fascist judge. Thanks. Signed, Andy. Thank you, Andy. Couldn't have said it better myself. Meanwhile, we have to struggle to get sane people onto the court. Because people like Coburn and Inhofe and Jim Demented want more Jerry Edwin Smiths, not less. You know, it's a pity I don't believe in imprecatory prayer. Have a big steak dinner this evening, Judge Smith, and don't forget to eat all your fat. have to. Yum. Yum. Just say it. You know, I particularly like them like they bring them to you at Ruth's Chris, where there's about a pound of butter on a melting away on a sizzling plate underneath the steak. I'd have mine that way, Judge. Make sure you get the extra sour cream and butter for your potato too. Don't forget the creme brulee for afters. Of course, I'm kidding. This is a man out of control, and there should be hearings begun in the House of Representatives. But the House of Representatives is a wholly, entirely, completely, undeniably ineffective, ineffectual, dysfunctional body right now. Hell, even if there was a Democratic majority, I don't even know if we'd have interest in starting the impeachment proceedings that should, honest to God, in terms of the Constitution, be opened into this creep. Remember, we have to look forward and not back. Speaking of looking forward, it's time to get out of here. Thank you for the contribution that came in this evening and for the contributions overnight. Again, very, very much appreciated. And you can look on the website now, headonradionetwork.com, on the contribute page, and you'll see exactly where we are in the fundraising process. And your help is both needed and appreciated. Thanks to all of you for your ideas, your phone calls, your comments, your emails, everything. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to the Horns Jewish Mom and our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox. He has been a very, very busy man, but he managed to get the PayPal button back up and working, and that is very much appreciated, John. Thank you kindly. And thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, without whom none of this would go out. It's just that simple. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there, learn about the Coal River Wind Project, learn about the AIC campaign, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency campaign, learn about all the amazing work that Coal River Mountain Watch does. That's why I describe them the way I do, because of the amazing work Coal River Mountain Watch accomplishes with so very little every day. And sign up for the newsletter. Email. It's easy. And maybe get yourself a really cool t-shirt. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.